Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin.
What I learned about lived experience is that the voice, that it makes a difference at the table because you begin to understand the plight of those who are the least of these. You know, going back to that quote, you know, how do you get those who are least impacted, which would be probably be those people around the table, to be just as morally outraged as those who are, without that voice in the table, taking them to that point would be folly.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we are talking about vaccine equity for the incarcerated. By now, the evidence is overwhelming. Some people are experiencing a worse pandemic than others. Since the COVID pandemic began, we have tried to examine the crisis from the points of view of different communities, especially those that have been historically underserved, as they have had to devise mitigation strategies while shoring up their own resilience, and this in a highly unequal world that already made that hard enough. For episode 117, we took a look at vaccine equity and disability rights. Our guest was Dr. Kara Ayers, Associate Director of the University of Cincinnati Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. I've included a link to that episode in the show description, but here's a preview.
I think one of the harder to document, but still very impactful, was also this dialogue that society started having and in many ways didn't stop having, that, you know, only the sick or the old would die. And so, first of all, we now know that that's not true, very inaccurate, but just the impact of hearing so many people be fine with that or see that as a reasonable expenditure during this pandemic, when we also knew that there were things we could do to prevent loss of life. So I think that for many of us, including myself, is a deep wound that will take, I'm not sure what amount of time or what to heal. It's a very deep sense of distrust in that it's, you know, I've heard some people describe it as saying the quiet part out loud. So it wasn't a surprise that the disabled life was so devalued, but it was pretty hurtful, especially to see people maybe through social media that you knew, sometimes loved ones or friends, family members, that would make comments like, you know, we got to get on with it. You know, unfortunately, it might make some people really sick, but they were probably sick already. And so to see that callousness in our society is has definitely been hurtful.
And so today we are continuing the equity conversation about the COVID vaccine by bringing in another important voice, those who are incarcerated or involved with the criminal justice system. It's too easy to forget that anything that can be said about the pandemic in general applies tenfold for those who are incarcerated. But just as incarcerated persons are uniquely vulnerable, their lived experience also provides an untapped well of knowledge and even expertise that we can choose to tap. Yes, that's even for an issue as complicated as vaccination. So we could think of no better conversation partner than today's guest, Carl Hunter, Executive Director of Building Promise USA, a peer-led, peer-run, and peer-driven organization that works to advance public policy for the benefit of families and communities impacted by mass incarceration. Carl was also a Hogg Policy Fellow from 2018 to 2020. Carl, it's so wonderful to have you here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's an honor to give back to an organization that's given me so much.
Yeah. Well, the pleasure is ours. So tell our listeners about you. Where do you come from? And how did you end up becoming a Hogg Policy Fellow?
It's a It's a real neat story. On October 7th, 2017, I came to my 11th rehab in Austin, and I got here pretty funny. My good friend is the person who got me to rehab every time, and he asked me, well, where you want to go now? And I was like, well, I want to go to Florida. He said, well, you know you love live music, and Austin is the live music capital of the world. And I said, okay, well, if this is my vacation, let me come to Austin. And it was the thing that transformed my life. I got here on October 7, 2017. I couldn't add 8 + 9 in my head anymore. But 300 days later, I was standing before the Select Committee on Opioid and Substance Use Disorder giving my first public testimony. So within those 300 days, I actually threw a prayer. I went to an organization called Communities for Recovery and kind of found out who I was. And they asked me to do the prayer at their charity dinner. And someone walked up to me after the prayer and said, you know, my partner and I are never embraced by the prayer, but your prayer would have touched her. And I said, well, here it goes. And she asked me who I was. And she said, I have to introduce you to people. And as a result of that, I was connected to recovery people. And so you can pretty much say that I connected to the Hogg Foundation through a prayer, because recovery people received the Peer Policy Fellow grant award from the Hogg Foundation, and they chose me.
So you know Jason Howell?
I know Jason Howell. Howell was my boss for 2.5 years.
He was a former guest on the podcast.
That's very cool. To follow him.
Very cool.
And to just have the opportunity to be able to spend 2 years and being a Hogg Fellow. What I learned from the experience more than anything, I spent 20 years in community organizing. So we did a lot of protests, did a lot of marching. But, you know, when I went to being in the 86th session, understanding protests without policy change is just the people just walking around screaming, right? And so I began to understand the power of shaping policy. So if I walked away with any grand understanding is that I needed to be in a place, right, where my voice is heard. And I can impact policy. I think at the Medicaid, the board where they were making decisions on what Medicaid would cover. And this particular board, they were looking at covering medically assisted treatment. And I was able to give a testimony. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that testimony, they quoted me in the Statesman. They quoted me in the San Antonio Express. But what I got out of it was that my voice impacted people that I would never see. Some mothers and fathers and kids who suffer from the same thing that I suffered from, self-induced disorder, had the opportunity to get life-saving drugs that would save, you know, life-saving drugs that would help them through the process and get them through the process of recovery. People I never see. And that was the transitional moment to understanding how powerful it can be. We were able to help shape policy. And so that's what I walked away from with the 86th session. Plus, a guy from New Jersey almost had 2 laws in the state of Texas. You know, I made it the 2 bills that I was working on, 1465, and I forgot the other one. And I got to testify on the Senate floor. How cool is that? A crackhead from New Jersey? Stop! Right? So it was really cool. And that situation changed my life, and I got the bug, you know. And then during last session, I actually worked for an organization, the Recovery Coalition of Texas, which represented RCOs across the state. And they made me their senior policy advisor. Wow. That guy who came here on October 7, 2017, that was the furthest thing away from his mind. But things change. And when I talk about recovery, and I talk about it a lot in some of the things that I do, and the one thing you can't find find something new, but you can only recover something that you already had. And through my process of recovery, I just became the person I was always meant to be.
Your organization, Building Promise USA, recently received a grant from the Hogg Foundation. for the Reentry Vaccination Initiative. So tell me more about this project and what it aims to achieve.
Sure. Yeah. First, I just want to thank Dr. Martinez and Carlene Horton for always believing in me and backing my play. Right. The Vaccination Initiative focused on the formerly incarcerated population, men and women, who, because of collateral consequences and public and the stigma that comes along with being formerly incarcerated, don't have great access to health care. And so, you know, one of the major things that made us do this is I'm actually quoting, I talked to my son. My son is serving 36 years in the Department of Corrections in Colorado. And him and I talk often, and I told him about the project, and he kind of misquoted Benjamin Franklin, but we're actually using, this is what has prompted me to do this work and do this particular initiative. You know, those who are least impacted become just as morally as outraged as those who are, change occurs, right? And as a result of that, the Reentry Vaccination Initiative was born out of that, because what we wanted to do was to make sure that people understood, beyond the vaccinations, beyond COVID-19, these folks come out and they don't have access to health care. So it was actually a two-pronged assault. One, we're working with a number of peer-based organizations. Building Promise is working with the Reentry Advocacy Project, which comes through the Travis County Reentry Roundtable and the Community Coalition for Health. All of these are peer-led, peer-run organizations. And we came together to make sure that this population, one, was vaccinated, but the Community Coalition of Health is also working on getting formerly incarcerated people and homeless people health insurance through the MAP program and MAP Plus. So we combined the two efforts, working with Austin Public Health, which is doing the shots, the booster shots, the flu shots. We also have the Community Coalition for Health signing people, educating them and signing them up to get health care. So not only would people leave with being vaccinated, but they also left with the potential of having health insurance. And we also utilize the funding network to incentivize the shots. So for each person who came, we were able to give gift cards. We didn't get funded at the level we wanted to get to, but everybody who came got to receive the $25 gift card for the first shot. And when they came back for the second, which was, we just had on the 15th, they received another gift card. All in all, I think we served over 50 people. And a number of them also walked away with health insurance. I'm not sure about the numbers. All the numbers haven't come back yet. But we're gearing up next year to do a number of vaccination pop-ups again. And I received a call from the city, and we might be potentially funded by the city as well.
Okay. And so what does the research tell us about the degree of vaccine uptake on the part of the current or, you know, formerly incarcerated, and what crucial factors can influence the numbers in a positive or a negative direction?
Well, most of the research is showing that folks, you know, those who are most marginalized feel threatened by what has happened in the past in history. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to shy away from getting vaccinated. The critical nature of all the things that are going on and the people that are, I think I heard on NPR that on yesterday, over 800,000 people died from COVID, right? And so people are saying, well, you know what? I'd rather have a gun at a gunfight than not have one at all. And so we see the uptick in numbers, you know, from the first time that we had the vaccination initiative, we had low numbers, and the second one, we had more people. So we're seeing that more people are latching into getting vaccinated, especially around this time of the year when there's a lot of connection with folk. And so folks found themselves wanting to get vaccinated because they wanted to spend You know, this is the first Christmas where people are getting back together again. You know, last year, nobody was near anyone. And so people found that it was necessary to get vaccinated. So I can't tell you the specific numbers, but I can tell you what the trends were in the things that we were doing.
Let us imagine a PR firm that has been given $10 million to design a vaccine outreach campaign, something that I'm almost absolutely sure has happened somewhere.
Okay.
Who knows whether it's money well spent is a different question. What would be lost by not having at least one formerly incarcerated person at the table?
They would not. What I learned about lived experience is that the voice that it makes a difference at the table, because you begin to understand the plight of those who are the least of these. You know, going back to that quote, you know, how do you get those who are least impacted, which would probably be those people around the table, to be just as morally outraged as those who are, without that voice in the table, taking them to that point would be folly, because that voice isn't at the table. The status quo, you know, they walk away with, they have health insurance, they don't have health concerns. When a lot of formerly incarcerated people come back into the community, they're dealing with chronic illnesses. And because of their charge and because of social stigma, some of those chronic illnesses aren't being addressed. And I'm talking about not just COVID-19, I'm talking about, you know, type 2 diabetes, right? But because they can't get proper health care, right? Then what? We have a generation of young men and young women coming out dying before their time. So if that voice isn't at the table, then that can't be articulated. You know, we can talk about it, but there's a difference in when I can say, I feel you, right? As opposed to, sure, I understand, and right? But when a person can say, oh, I feel what you're saying, and it touched me in such a way that it takes me from out of my, the ability to have that voice at the table takes me out of my own bio data long enough to feel the plight of somebody else. And that's the importance of having those voices at the table.
Okay. The idea of formerly incarcerated persons becoming quote unquote productive members of society is so commonplace, you know, to the point of cliche. But how often does it really occur to people that the formerly incarcerated actually have deep knowledge of how the system works that could be, you know, could be harnessed to make improvements?
Well, the Hogg Foundation certainly did. The movement of the Peer Policy Fellows was important when they was like a eureka sign, because they found that there was value in lived experience. So in response to your question, it's that voice being there. You know, some people call me Reverend Hunter on some days, and there's a passage of scripture, that voice crying out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Right. And so having that voice is you're able to hear the echoes of those in the margins. And usually in the context of policy, you don't hear those voices in the margins because they're not allowed at the table. And the Hogg Foundation found it necessary to put those voices at the table.
Yeah.
And we impacted, you know, my class, my cohort, we impacted a lot of policy in the cohort before us. You know, they passed 1486, and, you know, you have a lot of peer work going on in the state of Texas as a result of people's voices, those voices who came from the margins.
Yeah. And to our listener, do not misunderstand. Even if Carl Hunter had never become, a public activist, if he had just managed to hold down a 9-to-5 job, that would still be as much worth celebrating as the path that he did take. But we are very grateful that we have somebody like you on the front lines of trying to improve public policy here in Texas. And you are originally from New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm from New Jersey. Yeah, I don't know what God had on his mind to have me in Texas, yeah. but Texas is my home now.
Yeah. It's whatever it is works in mysterious ways.
Yes, sir.
All right. Do you have any personal moments or stories that, you know, that testify to the impact that you have had or would like to have?
Sure. That moment that I spoke about earlier, when I was able to give a public testimony before the Medicaid board, that was a telling moment because it told me that my voice can make a difference, you know. And usually in being a person in recovery, we talk about being anonymous, right? But we're only anonymous in our meetings. And so, you know, the addiction took my voice away. And being in the process of recovery gave me my voice back. And becoming a Hogg Fellow gave a platform to my voice. You know, my first year here, the NAACP gave me an award for my work in the community, right? That guy on October 7th, 2017, who couldn't add 8 + 9 in his head. Now I'm getting emotional because I remember what I was thinking and felt hopelessness. And then all of a sudden, you know, if people follow me on Facebook, I always say I'm living my best life, you know. So I've gotten to do things that, this whole thing from October 7th to me sitting here with you on a podcast is me living my best life. Who would have thought an organization, and Colleen doesn't like me to say this, that you all helped save my life, that I had the honor to be on your podcast. That's way cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no arguments here.
Yeah,
and we've had like so many of our policy fellows on the podcast. So, for my own selfish reasons, I'm as well grateful. that we've kind of built up this this really kind of remarkable community of people with this particular kind of training and expertise. To go with their lived experience.
Yeah, you got a bunch of superheroes hanging around.
I love listening to stories like that. So this is your opportunity, if you want, to plug anything about your organization to our listeners, how they can find out more or how they can support either Building Promise or the reentry vaccination initiative or whatever else you like.
Well, you know, our website is www.buildingpromiseusa.com. We have a donate button, but what I want you to do more than anything is find out about the organization and the work that we're doing. You know, it's really, really cool that on September 4th, 2021, Building Promise received the Reentry Services Grant for the city of Austin. Reggie Smith, who is a former Hogg Fellow, founded the organization in 2017. In 2020, we became a 501c3. In 2021, we became the coordinating agency for reentry services for the city of Austin. Wow. Right? And I just want you guys to, you know, tune into the work that we're doing. We have some stuff coming up. We're working through the planning phase of what we call the one-stop-shop pilot initiative. And we'll be going into the implementation phase in March. And we need all the support that we can get. We need volunteers. At this point, I'm the only employee. But I'm about to hire some formerly incarcerated people to work with me through this pilot process. But we need as many volunteers as we can, and folks with skill sets. So the more the merrier, and there's a lot of work to be done. Mm-hmm. But more than anything else is I want folks who are the least impacted to become just as morally outraged of the barriers and the social stigma that formerly incarcerated people have to go through when they come back in the community. It's like their debt was never paid. Mm-hmm. And what we have to change is when they come back in the community, they pay their debt. When I pay my credit card off, I go back to zero.
Yeah.
But folks who are formerly incarcerated still have those things hanging on them. And the fight is to take some of those reins off so they can live their best lives and be productive members of society. That's it.
Okay, so he is Carl Hunter, former Hogg Policy Fellow, recently recognized by the Austin NAACP, and I'm sure others, for the wonderful work that he's been doing in his recently adopted community of,
yay, Austin.
Of Austin, Texas. It was really a pleasure to have you here, and good luck with everything.
Well, thank you for this opportunity, and I thank the Hogg Foundation for all that you've done for me. And I'll make you proud. Thanks for letting me share.
All right. Thanks a lot. In our different looks at the issue of vaccination, whether in the form of podcasts like this one, or even the op-eds that we've written on the topic, a key emerging theme has been the importance of trust and relationship for overcoming vaccine hesitancy. One of our guests for episode 113 spoke directly and eloquently to that issue. Here's a listen.
Relationship building is huge when you think about trust. So one of the signs is if you have a trusting relationship, that there's follow through. You know that the person's going to carry out what they said they're going to do. And it's not just showing up when I need something. It's showing up when my partner, my community partner, wants me to participate in whatever community outreach, and not necessarily because of something I want to do as a community outreach effort. So follow through on my end is important. I think that continues to let them know that I am committed and I'm invested. So we're in it for the long haul. So that's part of a relationship that it evolves over time. And so I would say follow through on what you said you're gonna do is a sign of a healthy relationship.
The voice that you just heard belonged to Dr. Shalonda Horton, clinical assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin School of Nursing, speaking in episode 113, titled, you guessed it, Vaccine Equity and Trust. As always, I've included a link in the show description, so check it out. Finally, because we're talking about policy fellows, a heads up. The Hogg Foundation will soon be announcing a new funding opportunity for our Policy Fellows initiative. So keep an eye on the Hogg Foundation website and subscribe to our emails if you're interested. And that does it for this episode. If you have comments or anything that you would like to share about the podcast, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Especially thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. Production assistance by Kate Rooney and Anna Harris. As ever, I couldn't do this without the support of my friends and colleagues at the Hogg Foundation. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please, leave us a review, subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choosing. You can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, among others. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.